This is Motor Mania with Damien Reid
on Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
And we've got a whole crew in the studio this morning. Noel Ebden is joining Naz Chowdhury in the Chanjiado. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, morning.
Hello, hello.
I'm amazed to see you two guys in here for various reasons.
Yes.
Noel, you're straight off the plane.
Yeah.
And straight in here into Chanjiado. I don't know how you're standing up after that mammoth week that you've been doing, running that the Mille Miglia.
Don't recommend it.
I
recommend
do.
The rally. Yes,
I do. I recommend you keep doing it because we want it to keep going.
All right, then. Yeah. All right.
Well, we'll get onto that in a moment. Noel, firstly, let's get on to you. You've been driving the new Honda HR-V.
Yes.
And then you're going to go out and go historic GPing after this, I believe.
Yes. And then tomorrow, I'm doing a Honda community ride to Kalba. I'm on a CB1000. So
oh, nice.
The next show, I'll be able to update you on it. So
Nice. How's the little HR-V you've been?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's horses for courses. Imshan, you've driven this, haven't you?
No, actually, I haven't.
Was it not the one you drove?
I drove the... Oh, that's a good question. I drove the ZR-V.
Okay, I mean, look, it's a HR-V, nice little car. Starts from...
So which car is it on stilts? Because the ZR-V is a Civic on stilts. I think the HR-V is the Jazz.
It's smaller. So, I mean, look, it's a great little family car. Good thing for nipping around town. I don't like the gearbox on it. It's got, it's that slippy.
It's a CVT, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the only thing I didn't like. Rest of it, absolutely fine. The cruise control is a bit, when it spots another car 4,000 miles away, it jumps on the brakes, which is, but apart from that, they're my only two complaints. What's quite interesting is it's 94,900 starting price, right?
Okay, yeah.
And monthly, I was doing the calculator thing on the Honda site. You can get one for 1,487 dirhams a month, which is less than a hire car.
Yeah, okay.
So why would you hire a car when you can buy a Honda with a warranty, with a service package, drive it for 3 years, and then sell it.
And get some of your money back.
As long as you've got the deposit, the initial deposit, of course. Mm. And what's that going to be? Let's say you have to put down 10%, 9,000 dirhams?
Mm.
Most people hopefully could rustle that up, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So why would you hire a car? Why do people hire cars when they can do things like that? That was the thought process that went through my head. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's a... You know, it's not a performance car. It's not an off-roader. It's not going to excite you like a lot of the other stuff that's out there, but it does a really good job. It's a typical Honda. It's very good at what it does. As I say, not a fan of the gearbox. Sounds like the clutch is slipping all the time, but apart from that,
the other side of that, I guess, is you're getting phenomenal fuel economy.
Yep. Yep.
Because of that gearbox. It's the double-edged sword. I hate gearbox, but I love the economy.
Yep. I went all the way to the East Coast in it and back, and the needle barely moved.
Mm.
So,
and to ask you another question, what car under 100K actually excites these days?
True. Yeah,
I'd rather have something that's reliable, solidly well-made. There's a lot of Chinese options out there, and most of them look fine. We still have no idea how they're going to last over time. Zero idea. They're flooding the market because the manufacturers have retreated to the upper echelons. So I'd rather have a Honda, in my opinion, that I could rely on.
Yeah, because you're going to get that, aren't you? I mean, Honda don't make bad cars.
If you buy a Honda, it will be reliable.
Exactly.
Yep. Compared to an unknown brand from somewhere.
And the other thing is, which I didn't mention, which I should have mentioned at the beginning, is it looks really cool. It's a cool looking car.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those Honda's done quite well to move its kind of SUV line into a bit of a cooler look, if that makes sense. They're a bit more, they've really updated that kind of, they've got a good modern look now. So, yeah, I mean, it looks good, does what it says on the tin. It's not a Lamborghini, but
if you could find a Lamborghini for 100K, I think Noel's bought it already.
and it wouldn't be working,
It'd be sitting in the front driveway, yes.
It's a great plinth.
Yes, looks good, yeah. Just don't lean on it.
Oh, it's a Pontiac.
Yeah, exactly.
good, all good. So, yeah, I was impressed for the, especially for that money as well. I mean, anything for under 100,000 now is, that's an SUV-ish style body. That's pretty good.
Still yeah. got a Jimny under 100k. Just
oh, he
about.
Always goes back to yes. the Jimny, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, and the five.
You can't actually get one because they're all sold yeah, exactly. out.
No, but yeah. the five door is. I don't know if it's coming here, but it's out there now. So
in the wild,
it's that's
running free.
Just been released in other markets, and that's creating another storm yeah. of and again, you know, baby G wagon kind of things going on with that.
That's for the Jimnys.
Yes.
Apparently in India, they're yeah. sold out yeah, for a year. Can you imagine for a year in a
for
market
a year.
Like India, they're sold out?
Yeah.
You can't get one in India. And wow. they make them in India.
Wow.
Wow.
I think that was where the... No, there was a launch for it. Yeah, it might have been in India, actually, for the five-door. Just
That's
just
why they launched
week.
The car, because they knew exactly who wanted the car. I think out here it'd be interesting. But anyway, we're getting off Jimny's for a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. We always end up on Jimny's somehow, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. So what have you been up to in the last... couple of weeks, car-wise, anything?
Shipping stuff, boxing stuff up. I'm shipping a lot of my bikes back to the UK, so yeah, I've been doing that.
How has the process been in terms of getting repatriating vehicles and things out of here and back home?
I'll tell you in a couple of weeks when they've left. So far, so good. There's lots of companies here that can box stuff up. You can get, just anyone out there who's thinking of moving bikes, you can actually buy the old container boxes that come in from the bike dealers.
Oh, okay.
So when they come in, they end up with a big pile of framework, basically, their new bikes come in, and they don't know what to do with them. So
yeah.
you can actually buy them off them, and that's the ideal way to ship a motorbike, because you can basically put it back in a box that's built by a manufacturer. Obviously, they know how to ship bikes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit of advice there, a little two-wheel advice for people. So, you know, I'm always trying to bring the two wheels onto the show.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I've been mainly doing that and then looking forward to going to Historic GP after this. So
yes, yes, I might wander out there
about in a bit.
Myself yeah. at some point.
Yep.
Amazing stuff. Now, firstly, we'll just get on to, yeah, was it what we alluded to before the break, the Cadillac Escalade V-Series. That's 682 brake horsepower, 6.2-litre supercharged V8. I guess it's the final swan song before the company goes all electric.
Mm. Could there be a more Dubai car than that?
I loved it. It's a hand-built engine. So the difference between that and, say, the CTS5 Blackwing engine is that they've swapped out the 1.7-litre Roots blower with a 2.7-litre unit. So it's massive. So 4.5 seconds, 100 kilometres an hour. It's 1.7 seconds quicker than the regular Escalade.
Hang on. This is a sub-5-second Escalade.
Yes. Yes.
Who was asking for that?
Yeah, who needs that car?
I didn't. No one asked for it, but I'm glad they did. But I tell you what, no one did ask for, and I'm really glad they did. And this just made me laugh. It has a V-mode button on it in front of the shift lever, which activates launch control on this thing, which is amazing. It really is like firing a sled. You know?
How do your kids deal with V-mode on the way to school?
When you've got
every
seven
morning?
People in the back doing the run, hang on, kids, I'll do the launch control.
You'd be launching Lily and Chelsea on the back.
682 horsepower V8. So
for the executive on the move.
Yeah, yeah. Just both feet on the pedals, 1,500 RPM, lift both pedals, and away you go. 80% of its 885 newton meters of torque apparently is available from 2,000 RPM. So it really is. It feels almost like electric car kind of surge to get going. And you have to remember, it's 2.8 ton curb weight.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was amazing until I checked what the Tesla Model X is. And the Model X is 2.5 ton.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's quicker, right?
A Tesla is almost as much as an Escalade with all the trimmings.
I think it was a Model S, not a Model 3, a Model S.
X.
Okay, fair
enough. Yeah.
But one thing that Tesla doesn't do that this thing does, it doesn't have the cold starts.
Right.
And this will send cats running for cover. This is it's phenomenal. Quad pipe active exhaust system on this. It just gives all the loud crackles and pops when you lift off on the accelerator, but it does have that stealth mode, so it does keep the neighbours happy as well. Six-piston Brembos behind these 22-inch tyres. They've tweaked the air springs and the adaptive dampers so it doesn't sail like the Queen Mary around corners anymore.
All right, that's good.
It sort of keeps four wheels on the ground. It's got cylinder deactivation, of course, better fuel consumption. 10-speed transmission.
What is better?
But like I said, it's better. It's not good. It's better. You push the throttle hard on anything and it's going to use fuel, okay? So, yeah, I did see at one point 10 miles per gallon driving this car.
Better.
So I enjoyed it.
At 10G.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I love that. It's unashamedly American. It's a red, white, and blue send off before they go all electric.
It sings the song of its people.
Yes,
it does indeed. But speaking of the opposite of 10 miles per gallon, Naz, you were down talking to BMW about all things hydrogen. That they've got a workshop here now.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it really opened my eyes. I mean, you know, I think BMW somehow have been actually ahead of the curve. So if we go back 5-8 years ago, whenever it was, they had the i3 and the i8 and the i5. And arguably, their R&D into the electric world was way before anyone else. And if anything, I think they were just a little bit too early.
Well, I was going to say exactly that. Yeah. The i8, if you look at an i8 now, you'd buy that car.
Yeah. 100. It was just.
It was just too.
It
too
was
far
a car from
time.
The future, yeah. And I think if it had, like you said, had it been released now. So I think they are ahead of the curve with the R&D, and even more so with this hydrogen technology. I mean, look, it's absolutely fantastic. One of the problems with electric cars is we have this range anxiety, right? So you always have to work out where your next charge is. We also have the limited resources of all the cobalt and lithium and the production cost and the greenness of producing the car. So what these guys have done is they've taken all that into account and said, how do we solve this? And they've solved it by creating a car with a hydrogen fuel cell. So check this out. It's actually just an electric car. So it's a prototype based on the traditional X5 platform that we all know and love, which looks really good.
Yeah.
But this is just a prototype vehicle. So in the transmission tunnel, there's a hydrogen tank, and under the back seats is a hydrogen tank. That holds 6 liters of hydrogen, which could be filled at 3 to 5 minutes on a refill.
Perfect.
So you can just put it in, and that gives you 500 kilometers of range. Now, this is the good part. Under the traditional engine bay, there's a fuel cell. Now, without going into too much complicated detail, the fuel cell uses oxygen from the atmosphere along with the hydrogen from the tank and creates electricity. As simple as that, like seamlessly. And that electricity is then stored in a battery behind the back seat. It's literally an electric car that never has to be charged. And check this out, because it almost sounds too good to be true. Guess what the byproduct is that comes out of the exhaust?
Something that's clear and...
It's water.
Water, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Arguably drinkable water. So it almost sounds like the perfect storm. And then if we look at the facts and figures, you've got 400 brake horsepower, 700 newton meters of torque, 0-60 in arguably 5 seconds or so. I mean, I took it for a drive. It really drives well. I mean, it drives like an electric car, but it drives like a solid German electric car.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have the little thing where they have the sound of the engine coming through the speakers. So, you know, I had it on and I had it off, and it was an incredible experience. And I'm just thinking to myself, this really is a viable option for the future.
Yeah, is this the solution?
Yeah. Are they too far ahead of everyone else, last time, right?
But also for things like heavy vehicles, for trucks and things, that's a viable way out.
Yeah, 100%.
Hydrogen, Hyundai going very heavily down that path.
Yeah, and there's someone there that said, oh, but like carrying hydrogen tank is dangerous. They've got, you know, carbon reinforced plastics as the casing for the hydrogen. Yeah. But then I just said, you're driving around with 120 litres of fuel in your car, mate.
There's a lot of myths going on about it. I know there's the talk about, wasn't the Hindenburg hydrogen? Yes, but it was the material, the casing. It wasn't actually the fuel.
That's right.
That caused that. Yeah. So, you know.
And I drove a hydrogen car in Japan. A Honda, funnily enough, going back against Honda, but I drove a hydrogen car probably 15 years ago, and it drove great then.
Yeah.
So the technology's been around for a very long time. It's just getting it to market.
So there's two things here. I mean, look, if I was to nitpick, I'd say this was like, it really, really impressed me. I mean, the way it drives, the performance, the handling, like the center of... the center of gravity is nice and low, so it drives like, you know, X5 for me is arguably one of the best sporty, that along with the Porsche Cayenne, like beautiful 4x4s. Two disadvantages here, in my opinion, as of now, although it's not out yet. top speed, as with all electric cars, the power kind of tails off towards the higher rev range. So it has a top speed of 115 or 185 kilometers, which is okay, I guess, since it's a pro type. But you just want to know that it can do more, right? You just want to know it can do more. So yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah. When can you do more than that? And the second thing is, of course, the infrastructure for hydrogen filling.
Yeah.
So I know BMW BMW Corporate, are in talks with the relevant government bodies to look at hydrogen filling stations. Yep. And I'm guessing they'll be universal across any other manufacturers that want to do that as well. But, like, just want to put it out there, even though this is a prototype, had BMW been in a position to sell these cars, I'd put my name way up there on the top of the list. And that's coming from a real car guy. Like, I don't do electric cars, but this one sold me.
Amazing stuff. Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, let's keep on the clean fuel theme because COP28 is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all experienced that in some way or another. I caught up with the CEO of Polestar while he was in town, Thomas Ingelath, to talk about what they were doing with the Polestar 2, the 4 is coming out soon, and the 3. So I had a quick chat with Thomas while he was in town the other day.
Since our company has, from Steyr day one, of course, a very strong connection to the shift to sustainable transportation and enabling us with the product that we offer to the customers, being as well very clear about the two elements in what we can do about this shift to sustainability. This is a perfect place because the topic, we don't have to raise it, it's natural here. So we come to a natural platform for us to actually promoting the two things. And when I say two things, the one thing where we say, okay, electromobility is the beginning of the sustainable journey, and we have to make sure that the product that we produce gets as sustainable as possible, meaning reducing the CO2 footprint of the product that we deliver to the customer. And B, talking to the customer, to the use phase responsible person, in order to make sure that we have sustainable energy that charges our cars. And you can imagine going to another venue, a car show or wherever, these topics, you have to raise them, you have to switch them on in order for people to get into it. Here, obviously, naturally, there is a perfect base and a big understanding that is an important topic, and we can be a little bit more educated and in-depth about it. And if you would come here and see our stand, where we actually brought as well, not only the Polestar 3, but as well some exhibit that try to visualize what it means to work on the CO2 footprint of the car, and exhibits which then show how the CO2 burden, reducing it with certain materials, how much impact it has on what goes into the car. That's, of course, something that is a great place here to make people see and physically with this exhibit experience what CO2 reduction in your product means. I think it's important that, especially in times like this, where the world is so busy with other things for good reasons. I mean, there are certainly topics which should be on politicians' mind, on consumers' mind, but to just remind everybody that the big topic of this decade, the decarbonization, should not be overwhelmed and forgotten in all the other topics and crises that the world is, of course, busy with. And I think it was a perfect start yesterday when UAE and Germany together kicked off, finally make it happen that there's a fund that is supporting the countries that are suffering under the climate change already today to a high degree. I think that's where we almost start to take it as a natural piece of the news that this or that natural catastrophe is happening. And I think that's where we should not get used to that as it has to be.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, it's not God-made weather. It's actually us who are doing this. It's a perfect moment to actually make people aware that we can change that. That's actually one of our biggest ideas with the message that we have here. There's something that we can do about it and something that you as a consumer personally can do about it and not be fatalistic about climate change.
Yeah, so Thomas Ingelath, the CEO of Polestar, taking advantage of COP28 to go and put some cars down there and show them options and things that they can do with electromobility and that sort of thing. So we're going to stick with him after the break. We're going to when we come back, we're going to talk about being climate neutral. How did the brand form initially from the depths of Volvo? And also we've got the new Polestar 3 coming out in the market in pretty soon, just a few weeks' time. So stick around. We've got a whole lot more Motor Mania coming up straight after this.
This is Motor Mania with Damian Reid
on Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
I'm Damian Reid and I'm joined by Inthishan Jiado in the studio. We're going to talk about all things Mille Miglia in just a few moments' time. Noel Ebden and Naz Chowdhury in here as well. But we're just before the break, we're talking to Thomas Engelath, the CEO of Polestar. And he's here to attend the COP28 summit. Of course, Polestar is the all-electric company that started as a spin-off from Volvo and it's a standalone brand now. So let's listen to what Thomas had to say about climate neutrality.
We declared this moonshot goal, Project Zero, which gives us the mission to strive to find all the way to get to a production of a car that would come to the customer with a zero CO2 burden. Now, that's a moonshot goal. It's basically, by today's standards, unachievable. There's a lot of things that we know how to do the reduction, but there are really elements in the car production whereby today's knowledge, we wouldn't know how to eliminate the CO2 footprint. So to have that moonshot goal means that we strive to find those solutions. And even if it takes a long, long time, a decade, to get onto that journey already today, find the research, find the companies who have the same goal, and start and kick off that search for these solutions. And of course, if the goal is to get to this solution, the important things is all the stuff that we learn along the way and which we can implement already along the way. Will we reach that goal of a CO2 pre-produced car in 2030 or in 2035? It is much more important that the learnings that we take along that journey, we implement already in the production cars that we have in all along the way in this decade and make the CO2 footprint generally each year lower. And that is what is the effect for the day-to-day production. Our Polestar 2, when it came to production 2 years ago, it had a CO2 footprint of around 26 tons. Today, it is at 23 tons. Polestar 4 that we launch, Polestar 3 that we launch, all of them have a very clear goal of coming already with a lower CO2 footprint to market. First thing, of course, in those is to go below the 20. I mean, this is how you make things happen day after day by having this vision that guides you what is important to achieve every day. In 2017, we announced the foundation. We had the Polestar 1, a very exclusive GT coupe, which led and to the shift to the full electric Polestar 2. And in the first moment of bringing out this brand, we displayed what will be the journey to 2025. And we have now here on the stand our first SUV, the Polestar 3, a car that is approaching with a mission to bring to the SUV market, to the very demanding, luxurious premium SUV market, an SUV that fulfills all the expectations of you sitting nicely high in a car and having that luxury experience that you want with this sovereign, luxurious ride, but in a highly sustainable way with excellent connectivity, with a navigation that is as easy to use as you do it with your mobile phone, speech recognition, all of that to the cutting edge of innovation. So really approaching the luxury premium segment with products that people get passionate about, that they love, where they enjoy the ride, the control of the car, all is this masterpiece of, you know, a car industry that has learned over decades to master this incredible piece of craftsmanship, and combining that with all the modern goodies of a great electric drivetrain, great connectivity, and of course, going as well in the next years to the first step to unsupervised highway piloting, so that in the traffic here, when we rode now here 45 minutes to the venue, we basically could have switched off and go and do your emails in a car. All this is part of our journey centered around design. Yes, I'm a designer. I have been working as a designer all my life till I took that job to lead this brand. And I think that is the best way how you make people passionate about cars through design, giving it this beautiful nature. People get passionate about it. Day after day, they experience through the design all the great materials that we bring into the car. Even the interface, when you interact with a computer in a car, I think, I mean, come and have a look at the Polestar and how easy to use it is, how pleasant it is to your eye, having that very Scandinavian approach of Scandinavian minimalistic luxury, where you really see how you craft each and every detail meticulously and make it the star of the show.
Yeah, so that was Thomas Engledath, the CEO of Polestar, talking about all things to do with COP28 and, of course, Polestar coming into the market. The Polestar 3 is in the market. The 4 is on its way very soon. Started from Volvo roots, and they're their own brand. Really good-looking car. I like the subtlety of them because he's come from a design background too. So that's the thing that, you know, that I like. That it's very light and airy. Mm. If you know the current trend of Volvo architecture, it's very
nice
similar
cars,
to that.
I'd buy one.
Yeah, I'd so totally. I really like it. It's very, very, and there's no glaring badges. There's no badges that say, "Hey, I'm an EV."
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
just a Polestar. Yep. You know, it's, which is nice subtlety. Hmm. Right. So let's go from subtlety to the outrageous.
Quite literally, yeah.
And in the Shanjata, I've got to thank you so much. You've paired me up with one of my all-time best co-drivers,
Completely by accident. Can you tell us who Valentino Balboni is? And I'll tell you how much of an accident it was.
Well, put it this way. For almost 40 years, this guy had, probably the best job in the world. He was Lamborghini's chief test driver. From the 1960s right through. So every 10 and 12 cylinder Lamborghini supercar before it got signed off, it got ragged by Valentino Balboni around
run in.
Yes. And
80% of all Countach's, Miura's, Diablo's were driven by
In the 1980s, Balboni was the only test driver who was simultaneously employed in prototype development, production, and customer service at Lamborghini. So he became, therefore, the face and the brand and an ambassador for Lamborghini. In the 1990s, Santagato production began of the Diablo, and prominent customers in the USA and Japan and, of course, over here as well. They often insisted on meeting him in person to hear about their new car directly from the chief test driver. And we saw that when we were down at Flat 12 Cafe when we called in. There is a Murcielago there, and because he had to go over, they said, "Please come over and sign my car for me."
Brilliant.
Amazing stuff.
I think the names of the people he's delivered cars to, just some of the few he's telling me, Nelson Piquet, he delivered a car to him in Monaco. Which is a story where he said Piquet drove the Countach beyond even Valentino's limits. In fact, beyond what the car was capable of to scare Valentino Balboni. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, that's
and then he bought
some.
The car. Well, he just bought the car immediately.
I mean, if someone could, you'd have to be of the Nelson Piquet ilk to scare this man. He's the most relaxed guy I've ever sat next to in a car whilst he's thrashing the car. But let's have a quick listen to our very quick chat.
Okay, so we're sitting in a little bit of traffic here in the Ferrari Testarossa on the Mille Miglia, and my driver of the day has been none other than Valentino Balboni. Those of you who don't know the name, you should go and Google it, because we shouldn't have to tell you that this guy is the guy that's been responsible for road testing virtually every model Lamborghini since before I was born. Valentino, firstly, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend the day with you in the car. What's your impression been so far of the Mille Miglia?
I am very, very happy to be here. I am enjoying driving this beautiful Ferrari, which is an old timer, a young timer, and it's nice, a beautiful event. Driving this car remembers me more or less the competition time we had with the Ferrari and with the Countach, you know, and it's a pleasure. You know, I know this car because we did a lot of comparison tests on the times, and I am very happy to be here driving this car today.
Well, it has been certainly an experience, and getting through. We've gone out through to Ras Al Khaimah, to Fujairah, going through all seven Emirates, plus into Oman briefly as well. And now we're in the car making our way back through the rush hour of Dubai, and that is quite an experience if you've not been here before.
Yeah, taking advantage to while we're stuck in traffic to get a quick question there. Also, too, very quickly, back on Polestar, Talal has texted in. Thanks, Talal, to say, dear Motor Mania team, the Polestar 3 is arriving in March and April next year. So thank you very much for that. Yeah, took advantage of any opportunity I could to, because we were kind of busy driving, but we were stuck in the traffic down there at DIFC area. So get the recorder out, have a quick chat. On our way to Flat 12 Cafe, and I know the guys listen to our show, so a big shout out to the crew at Flat 12. best coffee, love it. He saw the Murcielago there in the corner, couldn't help himself to wax lyrical about those Lamborghini days, and then also how did the Testarossa, of course, compare to the Lamborghini Countach, which was the car that he developed to go against the car that we were driving. Let's have a listen.
Well, this the Testarossa has to be compared with the Countach LP400, the first version we did. We produced in 71, you know. Of course, on those days, on those cars, we had the best material available, but the big problem for both Testarossa and Countach is, the high-profile tires available on those days and the weight of the car, which makes the car constantly kind of oversteer even on a straight, you know. So you have to take a kind of a special driving skill, driving attitude to understand before it does what the car is going to do. Compared to the Countach LP400, I would say Testarossa is more comfortable. Even the suspension, the seats are more comfortable and definitely much more visibility, which helps a lot. You know, Countach is a very, very strange car. It's so special for what it is. I mean, we never had a complaint because the car was a heavy steering, heavy clutch pedal, heavy accelerator. It was difficult to drive, but, you know, everybody, every customer enjoyed driving and enjoyed, accepted taking also all the, uncomfortable situation, you know, because Countach was, when he came out, and still today, after 50 or more years, is a car that catch an incredible attention when you drive the car. The Countach, after the first version, we built only 150 LP400. After the first version, finally Pirelli and Lamborghini, they developed very, very low-profile tires, and those changed the life and the attitudes of the car. Because we changed the suspension, we put it parallel wishbones, we improved the brakes, and on the same time we improved the frame, so the car changed life, let's say. The LP400S, the first one with white tires, low profile tires, makes the car extremely pleasant to drive.
Great to hear him talk. Give the Testarossa a heads up and say how there's actually more comfortable than the Countach. A little bit more time to go in the Changiato. We've just been talking about the Mille Miglia that's been kicking off. What a fantastic event. And to spend a bit of time with this man, Valentino Balboni. Amazing stuff.
Oh, incredible. What a privilege. And to get Balboni over here on short notice was really quite fortunate on our part. You turned up in the car, and this is actually a true story, and Mochi's going to love it, but I'll say it anyway. Because the owner who rode side saddle with him in the passenger seat for 2 years, his wife said, "I'd like to see you again," unless you won't be seeing again. So he had to go home. And that's how Damien Reid ended up in the jump seat with Valentino Balboni.
And I'm forever grateful for that owner's wife for insisting that, because it was memorable stuff. But let's continue with Valentino talking about, this is really interesting how Pirelli, at the tire manufacturer, influenced the design of the next generation Lamborghini because of the suspension travel, sidewalls are changing and that sort of thing. So this is what Valentino had to say.
Pirelli has always been a Lamborghini supplier, let's say, because we at Lamborghini, we insisted so much with Pirelli to have a special tire developed for the next generation Countach, which was the LP400S. And those tires definitely, the performance of those tires with a revised suspension are definitely the best compromise still today, still on the following versions, you know, the LP400S, Murcielago, Diablo, you know, thanks to Pirelli and thanks to the cooperation, we got the best result. And Pirelli is a partner, kind of partner for Lamborghini.
Yeah, amazing stuff. So we spent a few days driving a car that had a hard clutch. It had the air conditioning was typical 1980s Italian air conditioning. So not a brand new car, but you accept those sort of things every now and then. So I did have to ask him how he sees this generation of cars that are out there, because he's been designing and working with them right up to the Huracan, compared to the past generations that that we were driving.
I have a special, definitely a lot of respect for the modern technology, which is extremely important. I mean, in terms of pollution, in terms of everything, performance, but the flavor, the feelings that we had on my time, I mean, they are changed today. Today, 700 or 800 horsepower car, it's much more easy to drive than on my days with 350, 400 horsepower. But this makes a big difference. And of course, the driving a vintage car is extremely rewarding, because you are the man, you are behind the wheel, you control the car, and you do everything by yourself, good and bad. Modern car, they are so much friendly and helpful. Of course, there is always a limit to everything, but you know, modern car with this huge amount of power, they are not intimidating as it was a Miura or a Junta on those days.
Something you can relate to, Noel?
Yeah,
perhaps.
I drove the Countess, and I've driven the modern stuff as well, and I know which one I'd pick.
I know what you, I know exactly what it means.
Yeah,
the performance is is phenomenal. I mean, in the Testarossa, for instance, going through the tunnels, it sounded amazing, but it was all natural. There was no ECU sort of induced exhaust, smart exhaust systems, pops and crackles and just blows your head off. It was a subtle, by comparison, it's a subtle experience, but it's 100% natural.
It was different, a really nice phrase. I think it was symphony.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a symphony.
It was different to our one. Do you remember when we did it last year? You know, that's had 20,000 views on, for considering I didn't post it properly.
Where's my cut?
Yeah. Where's my cut, YouTube?
So now the next big question, finally, with we were wrapping up with Valentino Balboni. What will he and I be driving next year in the Shan? Let's have a listen.
Next year, if I will be here, must be a Lamborghini, must be a Diablo. Diablo, because I think it's the best compromise for this kind of drive, and also the best looking car. I would not hesitate to do even this with a Huntage, but I'm sure at the end of the day I would be much more tired.
In the shed, there you go, fantastic stuff.
So I'm going to have to get my work cut out now and get my Diablo back on the road, and I'll volunteer to give it to you guys for next year.
We'll cover the petrol.
Yes.
And the clutch. Yeah. Yeah. And the brakes and anything else that might go wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Very silent on this.
How far away is it from being ready? That was a long pause.
So you've got 12 months.
Look, the guys at Alex Renner, honestly, they've been absolutely great. But just getting hold of some of these parts is just incredibly difficult. There's a fuel line that goes from under the fuel tank back to somewhere within the engine. And the local dealer doesn't have it. UK Lamborghini doesn't have it. None of the independent franchises have it. It's on back order with the factory, and the Italians are like, when we make it, we make it.
Yeah.
And you just, it's a metal pipe, so you can't reconstruct or anything like that. It's okay. I mean, I was doing the Lamborghini LM002 restoration a couple of years ago, and that's when I initially spoke to Balboni to bring him over and do the car. It's just about getting the parts. That's the difficult thing.
Always the thing.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, that was a sensational experience. I also caught up with Thierry Boots and Stefan Johansson, but we'll carry those on. We're going to keep this conversation going, because it's just been my highlight of my year in the Shangiato. So thank you so much again for inviting Motomania onto the Mille Miglia.
Absolutely.
Loved every second of it.
Can I ask you, what was your hire? Because we had a bunch of new locations this year. We went to DIFC, we went to Al Mari Island, Abu Dhabi, and we went to Oman. We crossed borders, the first classic rally to do so. What was your personal highlight?
Every time that car fired up and the sound of it in my head. In fact, we parked the car at Yas, where we were waiting to go out and do the laps, and we switched the car engine off, and we sat in the car and just talked between us for about 10 minutes with no sound. And I was thinking in my head, I'm missing the sound of that 12-cylinder engine. I know it's going to be ringing my ears for the next 3 days, and I'm already missing it. And just as I was thinking that, Valentino was like, you know what's quiet around here? I need the engine running.
Yeah, it's strange, right? I was driving a car, I think we'll talk about in a few weeks as well, the yellow Porsche from Tomini, the Outlaw. And I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Once you get used to that noise and the discomfort and the heat and the lack of air conditioning, but you can't quite live without it.
I can't give you a highlight because every moment was a highlight. Absolutely. That's the best thing I've done this year.
Well, that's high praise indeed.
So yeah. Thank you so much, in the Shangiato, for the Mille Miglia. Thank you, Noel Ebden, for visiting us. Still a little jet lagged, I believe.
Yep.
And Naz Chowdhury, thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. We've got more Motor Mania coming up in the next couple of weeks, so do stick around, and we'll see you all then.